the Brains episode number 371. This is for the 12th of March, 2013. Almost to the equinox. Wonderful time of the year. The flowers are starting to bloom. Pollen is on the loose. Everybody is sneezing. Allergies are bad, but we still love it, and we love you because you're listening to the show. Thank you for joining us, and we're going to have a great time tonight. Again, this is a Tuesday night special. Of course, most of you listen later, and you don't really know what night we record this, and quite frankly, you don't care, but a lot of people do. We are recording this on Tuesday night, and for those that happen to be watching, and I know most of you are not, but for those that happen to be watching, we've decided that this is Goofy Hat Night on the show. And I've got the famous hat. This is the hat that Kevin wore during the blizzard of 93, the storm of the century. That and we just happened to be doing this show on the occasion of the 20th anniversary of the March 1993 superstorm. So, Kev, do you remember this hat and where you were when you were last wearing this hat?
You know, it's actually appropriate that you bring that up, because all day long, I was having a pretty good day. I was really kind of enjoying, you know, the memories. I'm seeing videos go by, and I'm watching the social media networks and hearing from some very dear old friends I hadn't heard from in a long, long time. And people are sharing their memories, right? They're saying, oh, it was such a wonderful time, and the snow was great, and we were bundled up by the fire. And if the power went out, we went to visit family and friends. And I was really feeling kind of warm and fuzzy about it until about an hour ago. And I get a note from Jason Elzer, who sort of snapped me back into reality, because he reminded me what the blizzard was for me. It was that James left me standing out on the snow all night long.
Yeah, Kevin had the duties of being outside in it. And again, we're and I understand this is a very, very low latitude market here. And along Interstate 20, we don't do snow here. I mean, people freak when it snows a half inch. So this the official total was 13 inches in Birmingham, but some of the suburbs had 2 feet. We had convective snow with thunder and lightning. We had winds gusting to hurricane force up on the mountain. So this was no ordinary storm. And Kevin worked it for the most part outside.
It was a great time. I mean, looking back on that, what a weekend it was. I remember coming in that Friday morning and late morning, I think it was, it started to snow a little bit. And between Friday morning and probably 8 or 9 o'clock Sunday night, I think I slept about an hour on the cold, hard floor of that little weather office that we had. I hate to mention the video, but go watch the video this week, because James has got the hat. And then ask yourself who, because I'm wearing Son of Hat. I bought another one because I gave the original to James. But ask yourself who looks more like Indiana Jones and who looks more like Mr. Haney. This is all I'm saying.
Good
point.
This is
wrong.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about the blizzard and the superstorm later, but let's go down the row here. And there's only one guy that's got sense that's not wearing a hat, and Bill is going to introduce our guest here in just a minute, because Steve has some television work to do. But I noticed that J.B. Elliott, the world's greatest weatherman, is now...
I'm loving this hat. This is awesome.
What is this? We're going to be like very descriptive for the people that are listening, but JB, describe in a very descriptive way what you're wearing there.
I don't know what it is.
Let me take a shot. I think he went into his closet and got a sweater and put it on his head and put his headphones over it.
Whoa. No, it's really a warm hat that I wear around the walking track early every morning when I'm walking my puppies.
Looks like something Homer Simpson's wife puts over her hair.
It has to be below,
show title.
Below 15 degrees when I put it on.
Wow. So, JB, you are working that hat, man. Where were you during the blizzard? Now, we've all got blizzard stories, and I don't want to, you know, totally eat up the intro time with this, but you obviously have clear memories of the superstorm of 1993, don't you?
very much. I stayed up all night watching you and Kevin on Smell-O-Vision, and I had just retired a few days earlier from the weather service, and so I stayed up and watched the blue lightning or green lightning due to the thunder snow. Next morning, I stepped out on the front porch and onto my top step on the front porch, and I immediately slid off into the yard and landed flat on my back in a huge snowdrift, and it looked like I was looking up out of a volcano. I couldn't see anything. And my son, who is a fireman, was parked out front with another fireman, and so they rushed up there and picked me up. But later that summer, that spot wouldn't even grow any weeds.
Wow.
JB, had he just retired before that, JB?
Yeah, I retired in 1989, I think in the autumn.
Okay, so a couple of years before.
I know now who he looks like. He, you know these Crime Stopper reenactments where they get the characters to play the robbers and the man. He looks like an actor in a Crime Stoppers episode that's about to go rob a Target or a Walmart store in that thing. I mean, JB, do not go into a Target or a Walmart wearing that hat with anything that remotely looks like a gun or a knife, okay?
Yeah, have you seen the VW commercial where the guys are riding around in their toboggans and stop and, you know, to get something in the store and they go in there, think it's being robbed? That's what JB is like.
Rest and buying the sausage. Yeah.
All right. So Nate Johnson, your work, what is that thing? A derby? What do you got
he
there?
He looks like he's been to France.
No, it's not that kind of hat. This is a paperboy hat, I think. I don't know what they call it. But there's that. And my wife has been on a bit of a Downton Abbey binge recently. And sadly, this is the most British thing I have.
Oh, man.
Your wife's hat. That's good.
He looks like the nanny.
Yeah, you watch it now.
All I can say is Nate is confident in his manhood to wear that thing. Wow.
Oh, man, darn straight. There's my alma mater, and here's my wife's alma mater. So the two teams
this
I pull
got
for.
Like 10, Nate's got 10 hats up there. He's trying on all of them. Wow.
I am the man of many hats, and don't you forget.
Title.
So Nate.
Oh, is that the, yeah, I'm liking that, Steve. That's shiny. That's good stuff. Giggle. Yeah,
we're gonna. Steve is the, you know, it's like the Munsters. Remember, there was like one normal person in the Munsters. We got one normal person here.
Appearances can be deceiving.
So Nate, what's happening in Raleigh, North Carolina?
Just enjoying some nice weather. It had a beautiful Sunday. It was finally got past daylight saving time. I'm sleep deprived, by the way. I'm just going to have to apologize for that up front. But I managed to get out and get a little weeding done on Sunday afternoon after we had our nap. And my two-year-old wanted to go tricycle up and down the street. So she did that. And we had a nice time. I got some weeding done. And so I'm pretty sure now at this point, the weeds hate daylight saving time about as much as I do, because I would never have had the time to do that before.
Hey, you got a big mic there. Is that a windscreen? You got like a big-time mic.
It is. Wow. This is part of the gear that was bequeathed to me by Jimmy Benedict, who's one of our one of the guys who works at the TV station. And I'm trying to just clean up the audio a little bit. So comments welcome. I know there's some radio geeks that listen to this, so let me know how it sounds. I'm sure I'm screwed something up.
We want an audio critique. I think it sounds great. I mean, excellent response. It sounds really good. So, but Bill Murray, you are wearing a pilgrim hat.
I like that. I like that.
Well, I was just jealous of the hat and the son of hat, so I had to go down and get my all winter hat, which hasn't been much use here in Alabama. So
do you get a free bowl of soup with that hat?
If you've ever been out in Texas near Sulphur Springs, there's a Pilgrim's Pride facility there. It has this about 75-foot pilgrim in front of it, and that's kind of what it reminds me of tonight.
That makes sense. Right? Yep.
So and again, anyway. for those of you listening, if you want to go back and see what these hats look like, you go to weatherbrains.com. Every show, we post show notes, and every episode has the audio version and the video version. So, but Bill, let's bring in our guest before he hangs up on us.
Yeah, he's got to leave in exactly 15 minutes, James. So tonight's guest, Weatherbrain, holds a Bachelor of Science degree in Meteorology from Texas A&M. He's a six-time award-winning broadcaster, 3 decades of television experience, including stints in Dallas, San Antonio, and Austin. He's been the chief meteorologist at KXII in Sherman, Texas since 2006, and he's got a new children's book that he wants to tell us about tonight. Steve Lenore, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's great to be here. And by the way, I have a hat on, too. This is actually a Dynatech CX1 portable weather observation unit mounted to my head. It's made to look like real hair, so no one will try to steal it.
Nobody should have hair like that. I knew there was something up with that.
Yeah. Will that catch snowflakes by any chance?
Yes, it will. I call it my Sapper Simpson haircut. It's rated to category 2.
There you go.
Show title.
Yeah.
Now, listen, guys, it's great to be here.
Steve, when we think about your area, we think about tornadoes, obviously, but you're not just all about tornadoes. You've got some other interests in weather, right?
Well, you know, I like it all. I'm kind of a big student of climate change, and it's interesting how my personal journey has changed on that over the last 10 or 15 years.
We didn't cover that before the show, Steve.
Oh, okay.
That'll get you zapped off our show pretty quick. We'll talk about climate change, but anyway.
Thank you for the salvation. I appreciate it. I love education, and that's why I wrote the book. You know, I go out to schools a lot. It's part of my job. You get a call from a school and say, hey, come out and talk to our third graders. And I say, sure, I can try to, you know, come out there and warp a few minds. Just kidding. And, you know, try to give them some interest in science. I think that it's really great when I can go out to a school and get kids to enjoy learning. I think it's more of a challenge now than it was 25 years ago when I started, because there's so much distraction out there with all the video games and all the different things on the internet, the YouTube, and all these different choices kids have, cell phones. I mean, I'm seeing third graders with cell phones now. What's up with that? Mm-hmm. But, you know, because of that, I think that if I can just get those kids to pay attention for 30 minutes, that's a real victory. And what I found in my years of doing the school business is kids like to laugh. I mean, that's no surprise. But they like corny jokes. And my family has had to put up with mine since I was 10 years old. So I thought, why not come up with a way to get some corny jokes and some cool science facts together in one book and use it as kind of a hook to get the kids to enjoy learning. So what I find is happening is when I go out to the schools and I incorporate the jokes into my presentation, the kids will write me later, or the teachers will write me later and say, hey, you know, Johnny loved that presentation, and he's still talking about the facts he learned. So that's kind of where I'm at with that, is I want to get this out there so people can get their kids excited about learning. But the kids aren't going to really know that that's what's up.
So your engagement tool then is humor, and that's what you use to get them. And tell us about how the book came about. It sounds like that's the basis for it, but tell us how you came to decide to write it, Steve.
Well, like I said, you know, I just have all these ideas floating around in my head about you know, maybe I could come up with something that would be fun for kids. Now, when I was 14 years old, I had an electronic project kit, and you could put together all kinds of circuits. And it had a little cartoon in there with each circuit that you were building. The resistor would say, hey, I'm the resistor, and I slow down the current. And I'm the transistor, and I modulate the current, and all this kind of stuff. So I remember that. I thought, you know, maybe that'd be a cool way to do it, to have like a little comic book kind of thing with the joke and the comic, and then do some real science in there. So I thought about it, came up with an idea, and then I thought, oh man, I'm in trouble. I can't draw anything. So I found an artist, and I gave her the written instructions for each comic, and she did a beautiful job on that. So she and I worked together, and I wrote the book and came up with the concept, and she did the comics for me. And it took about 3 years from start to finish. And let me tell you, if you want to write a book, you better have some patience. And so finally it's done, and it's out there on Amazon.com, and having pretty good luck with it.
Now, Steve, you sent me a copy of it electronically, and I've got it on my Kindle app. And is that the only way that you can see the book, or can you get it in print?
No, sir. It is available on Amazon.com as a paperback. It's $12.95 plus shipping. And of course, also, if I go out around my area, we do book signings, but that's not going to help most of y'all that are watching this to have that. So Amazon is it right now. And I am working on getting it into some national bookstores. Wish me a lot of luck on that, Kay. It's very, very difficult to get into a bookstore like that. But
wait, people buy books at bookstores anymore?
No, actually, hang out and drink coffee and look threatening.
And just read the books and buy them. That's right.
It's amazing that these, what they call brick and mortar bookstores, are even still in business. But I did a book signing at a Books a Million bookstore, which is a national chain. I don't know if you guys have them there. About 250 of them across the country. And they had a lot of people coming out to buy books. It was really surprising. So they still do have some success. But I think you have to find a high traffic area where a lot of people come by, you know, a shopping center or something like that. And in fact, I've got a book signing this weekend at a Half Price Books, which I don't know if y'all have those there, but they're a national chain. And I'm going to hope to help them sell some books and sell a few of mine.
Yeah, Steve, talk for a moment about the Sherman Market. Tell us where you're at and what goes on where you are.
You know, this is the most interesting place, I've got to say, weather-wise, that I've worked. Now, I worked in San Antonio 9 years, and that's a big flash flood place. But day-to-day, there's not much happening in San Antonio. It's two seasons there, summer and January. So there's not much going on.
That's about right.
Up here, along the Red River, it's like the graveyard of every cold front. So we get a crazy convergence zone that seems to hang around right along the Red River, just south of that. And in the 7 years I've been here, we've had two major dust storms, three major winter storms, major ice storm, and two killer tornadoes. I mean, we've had a lot to cover in the time I've been here. So I've never lived anywhere we had so much active weather every season. And boy, it keeps us on our toes. It really does. It's a forecasting challenge because of the topography here. We have 2,000-foot mountains in southeast Oklahoma, which we cover. And then we have treeless plains out west of I-35. So it's a pretty big range.
So, Steve, I guess one of the tornadoes that you're talking about is the Lone Grove tornado. Why don't you talk about that one for a moment?
You know, that was a weird tornado, and then the interesting date on that, February 10th, 2009. Of course, we had the February 10th, 2013 Hattiesburg storm, and, you know, it was a kind of a similar setup there, but it was unusually warm that day. I think it was around 70, and there was a tornado watch out, but nothing was happening. It was one of those things where you just keep looking at your watch, wondering when they're going to cancel the watch because nothing was going on. And then after dark, it was about 6:45, a lone supercell formed near Nakona, Texas, in Montague County, and that spun up a tornado. And they spotters saw it on the ground about 6:50. Well, then it got dark, and the storm crossed over into Oklahoma into a very unpopulated area. There's like three cows and a wolf out there, and they're not train spotters. So no one saw the thing for 40 minutes, but we were tracking it on our Doppler, which our station has their own, and of course the Weather Service Dopplers, and it showed a really impressive hook on there. So we had a pretty good idea it was either on the ground or a very strong circulation. And as the tornado tracked northeast, it was going 40 miles per hour. So it was really moving. And later, the National Weather Service did a damage survey. It was on the ground for like 60 miles. But in any case, it starts to come into Lone Grove. We're on the air, covering up all the programming. Literally, folks, getting hundreds of calls from irate viewers because we were covering up American Idol. They didn't like that. And I'm going to spare you some grief and not sing right now. But in any case, so then, 7:30, we had our spotter. I was on the phone with him, coordinating where to put him so that he could possibly see the tornado. And I got him into the clear slot on the north side of the hook. And lightning flash went off, and he said, "Oh, my God, Steve, I see a tornado. It's a large tornado on the ground 1 mile south of the city, moving northeast 40 miles an hour." This was about a quarter mile wide. It's an EF4, winds 175 in that. Went through Lone Grove, killed seven people in a trailer home, two trailer homes. And then it went on through and hit I-35 north of Ardmore, hit and killed the eighth person. They were driving a semi-truck. So there's your eight fatalities, seven in trailers and the eighth one on the highway. It was a very intense night for me. It was actually my first killer tornado I ever dealt with when I was on the air in my viewing area. And you think, wow, you've been in the business 28 years and it's your first killer tornado? Well, San Antonio, Austin, not too much going on down there. So that was a terrible night. I mean, it really was. And we got a lot of people coming up later, and please don't think I'm bragging, but you know, I know it's a public service when you have severe weather, and that's something we take very seriously. Have people coming up and saying, you know, I think you guys might have saved our lives. What do you say to that? You know,
yeah,
pretty right. Awesome. So we take that very seriously. So when we have severe weather, it's like I'm Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Severe weather, just very, very dead serious. But when we have nice days, then you're going to cut up a little bit. Okay. But that was a bad one. That was a really terrible tornado. Then, of course, Tushka, 2 years ago. And
you mentioned, Steve, that you know no one saw the tornado for a long distance before it got into Lone Grove. Do you think that contributed to the death toll that night?
You know, that's a very good question, Bill, because there's a lot of complacency. You know, there was going to be false tornado warnings. And I think people that night were watching, and there hadn't been any confirmation in 40 minutes, and they just thought, well, it's just a bad storm, and there might be a tornado in there, but it hasn't been confirmed, so I'm going to wait until I hear about a confirmation before I do anything. And that's a real problem that the Weather Service did a study after Joplin and found out that a lot of people did the same thing. Instead of getting into their hidey hole, they sat around, they watched it on TV, or they ran outside so they could see it. And they think some of those people, no way to know, but they think some of those people contributed to their own death by that sort of thing. So I think that did happen that night. People waited around until they were, you know, they didn't want to be inconvenienced. I understand that, but, you know, you got to make a choice here. And they waited too long.
Well, and the Ardmore area is no stranger to tornadoes, for sure. They've had a track record with them, no question. Now, you learned some. Your station learned some lessons in engineering, given some of the hail that comes through there, didn't you?
Yes, sir. Our station added on to the studio in 1995. And they decided to go ahead and build it with a shiny metal roof. How beautiful. Well, it's great until it rains or hails. My gosh. We had a hailstorm in 2009, and it actually hailed for 10 minutes so hard that we were doing wall-to-wall coverage during that storm, but no one could hear us. Later, viewers told me they just saw my mouth moving, and I pointed to the radar. They heard nothing.
Wow.
It was unbelievably loud. And as an added bonus, we have a railroad track that runs behind the station, so every now and then. Little Hank Williams going on there. That train's a-calling.
Well, Steve, I know you have to go in about 4 minutes, so I want to make sure that the rest of the panel, if Kevin or Nate or JB has a question, that they get a chance to ask it. Guys, you got anything for Steve?
Steve, did you self-publish or use one of these new online publishing outfits or a publisher, a traditional publisher?
Well, how it works is called POD. It's print on demand. I created the book myself. I hired some professionals to help me lay it out, and then we uploaded the finished document to a company called CreateSpace. Amazon owns them. And then they are the publisher. But I own the rights to the book. So if you go online and order a book tonight, then they'll charge you $12.95, and I'll make $2 off that. They get all the rest of the money. But that allows me to not have to buy hundreds of books in advance, like in the old-fashioned way. If you were a non-published author, you had to just buy all the books at once yourself. And that's very expensive. So this way, so online, people can buy them when they want. If you buy a book, it's printed and shipped to you, and I have nothing to do with it. And so it's a nice for the authors that are independent like me to get published, but I am not published by a publishing house. I am self-published.
What about the online services like Lulu or anything? Did you look at that?
Well, I've tried them. My book is pretty large as far as the size. It's 30 megabytes, and they don't handle anything larger than 10 megabytes. So for now, I'm on Amazon as a Kindle or a paperback, but there's a website called KerClick. It's for homeschoolers and educators, and I'm going to be putting the book on that site as a PDF digital book for sale as well. And I think we're going to have pretty good luck with that because a lot of people use that site that homeschool. And there's a big homeschool market out there that is looking for supplemental science materials, and I think this is definitely fits the bill for that.
Well, Steve, it's a fascinating book, and it's a job well done, and we're really excited to talk about it over here and to tell people about it. How can they go and find it again? Give us your website. Show us that real quick before you have to go. And
okay, I have a personal website, and it's a real imaginative name, stevelenore.com. And if you go on there,
I never would have guessed that.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing, isn't it? I didn't want to waste too much time making you try to guess it. And you can go there and click on WeatherWits book. It'll tell you how to order it. Or you can go straight to Amazon.com and type in WeatherWits, W-I-T-S, and it'll pull up the book listing there.
So, Steve, I've driven through your city a couple of times, but I can't remember. Is it right on US 82 or just south of US 82?
Sherman sits astride 82. It's right at the intersection of 75 and 82. Now, downtown Sherman is about 3 miles south of 82, the downtown area. The city has grown so much now, I don't know how long it's been since you came. And by the way, that could also pass as a really large golf club head cover. And it really could if you had a big golf club. Really, it's very stylish, my friend. Like it. But yeah, it's just south of 82 there, about 3 miles to downtown.
Okay.
So Steve, are there any Kevin Selly fans in Sherman Denison? That's what I want. Does anybody even know Kevin up there?
Who? You know? I think it depends on who you ask. I haven't done an actual poll myself. Hey, you know what, guys? They're telling me in my ear I have to go. I really apologize because I wish I could stay longer, but we got a show to do here at 9 o'clock on our Fox channel.
I hear you, Steve. Perfect. Have a great night. Thanks for joining us, okay?
Good to see you, Steve.
Hope I can come on again sometime.
Definitely.
All right. Here's the situation. Let's take a break. We're going to have Professor Peters. We'll have Weather Brains 101, and we'll come back and we'll do all the other segments. We got the picks of the week. We got the fog bank. We got the email inbox, the weather roundup. We're going to talk about the blizzard. A whole lot more to come as Weather Brains rolls along.
Weather Brains 101 with Professor Peters.
Perhaps one of the biggest operational advantages to dual polarization is the ability to detect debris that has been lofted into the atmosphere by a tornado. Several cases at new dual polarization radar sites have shown detection in even low-end, weak tornadoes. Differentiating between weather and non-weather echoes is a big benefit for dual polarization. So when those signatures begin showing up surrounded by legitimate weather, and they are also coincident with a strong velocity signature suggestive of a tornado, there's no doubt that debris is present, and thus a tornado is occurring. High reflectivity and a strong velocity signature are the identifying signs for a TVS, and that won't change. But reflectivity won't need to be nearly as high, especially in weaker tornadoes. In a dual polarization radar, correlation coefficient, or CC, will go into the non-weather range, thus with values less than 0.8. And ZDR will also drop, generally to values near or just below zero. If you have those signatures, and there is an associated velocity couplet, you have debris. A properly identified TDS is 100% confirmation of a tornado. The National Weather Service is already suggesting that warning products issued by National Weather Service offices include this information. Experience with a TDS signature is still limited. This type of signature has already helped the Birmingham National Weather Service office to document a weak tornado in an on-site survey that might otherwise have gone unreported. The TDS was also seen in several tornado events associated with Hurricane Irene on the Morehead City, North Carolina radar during beta testing. Now, it is important to note that a TDS will not occur in damaging wind events from straight-line wind, since it is the upward motion of the tornado circulation which is responsible for lofting debris into the air. Of course, nothing is perfect. You have to remember that by the time you see a TDS, the tornado is already occurring, so a TDS will not have an impact on lead time. So these signatures will not improve initial tornado warnings, but they can help immensely in communicating the serious and confirmed threat to people. The presence of a TDS also has no direct correlation to tornado strength. It will be important not to assume too much from debris detection, but these signatures will aid in building confidence in the warnings. And finally, a TDS will not always be detected with every tornado. Obviously, something has to be there, and weak tornadoes will probably be hit and miss for sure. And since the radar beam gets higher, the further it is from the radar, the ability to detect debris will decrease with distance from the radar. Now next week, on to some other interesting and as yet undefined topic for Weather Brains 101.
And Bill is just talking away and we can't hear a word he's saying. This is going to be one of these.
Doggone it. Here we go. Are you ready? You know, roll my music again, Jay.
No, it's okay. You just go for it. Go.
Roll that beautiful bean footage.
Go.
It's hard for us to imagine a time when there weren't tornado watches, but they really are a relatively new creation. The actual word was banned for years, as we learn from this edition of This Week in Weather History. The U.S. Army Signal Corps began taking weather observations and issuing warnings to mariners in November of 1870. But in 1877, a man named John Park Finley enlisted in the Signal Corps. He was trained in meteorology and climatology and had a tremendous interest in weather. In 1879, he was assigned to study tornado events across the plains. Through his research, he came to the conclusion that tornadoes could be forecast. And in 1884, he issued the first set of parameters for forecasting tornadoes. Many of them are still in use today. He would go on to issue the first operational tornado forecast that very same year. But his superiors in the Signal Corps believed that his forecasts were more harmful than the storms because of the panic that they created. So in 1887, a ban on the word tornado in Signal Corps forecasts was instituted. That ban would remain in place for 65 years. It stayed in place after the Weather Bureau, now the National Weather Service, took over forecasting from the Army. A tornado wrecked 52 large aircraft at Tinker Air Force Base in Oklahoma on March 20th, 1948, and this spurred the Air Force meteorologists to begin working on ways to forecast tornadoes. The Weather Bureau also began looking for ways to improve tornado forecasts and establish the Severe Local Warning Center, Storm Warning Center, which is now the Storm Prediction Center as we know it in Norman, Oklahoma. The ban on the word tornado fell on March 17, 1952, when that new center issued its first tornado forecast. The forecasts were the forerunners of the tornado watches we know today. Just a reminder of the season that we are in from the pages of This Week in Weather History. Follow my weather history tweets on Twitter. I am WXHistorian at twitter.com.
All right, before we do JB's current weather roundup, and again, this is March 12th, 2013. I thought this would be a chance to go back and share memories of the superstorm of March 1993. And I do believe that everybody on the panel here is sufficiently old enough to remember. Nate, do you remember the blizzard of 93?
We didn't get a whole lot in my part of the country. We got snow in the mountains.
How old were you? I'm being nosy. How old were you?
93. You can't ask that question. That's illegal.
Yeah. I was still in high school.
Oh. Mm. I have underwear older than Nate. Goodness.
I have underwear older than you. So.
Oh, boy. That's really scary. I don't even want to know about that. So you were east of the heaviest snow axis, right?
Yep.
All right. So I know for the rest of us, we were heavily involved. Bill Murray, you have an odd story about that. You were actually doing the weather on television back then, right?
Yeah, it's a pretty funny story. And the statute of limitations has run out, so I can discuss it now.
This is a great story. All right. This is good.
I was at the local CBS affiliate, and I was the weekend meteorologist. And, you know, when you see this thing a week out, you know, on the models, you start, you know, this hurricane strength low in the Gulf of Mexico and freezing temperatures in Alabama. You know, you begin through the week to get more and more confident with this forecast. And so I'm excited because I'm going to, for the first time, get to do what you guys do, you know, which is like sleep on a countertop for 3 days, and, eat deviled ham and crackers.
Special experiences, yes.
You know, I'm excited about this. So I call the news director on Friday and say, you know, what time do you want me in and all this? And he goes, well, Bill, I think what we're going to do is record the 10 o'clock news at 6, and then, we'll see what happens overnight. So my hopes were dashed, and they recorded the 10 o'clock news at 6 o'clock. The next morning, of course, they're on the phone, you know, saying, we're going to come get you, and blah, blah, blah. Well, you couldn't even drive. It was next impossible. And so that station went the entire weekend with no live coverage, at least from the weather office, of the biggest storm event probably in many of our histories.
Mm. Wow.
I looked outside that morning, and I really thought God had ended the world with snow. You know, because you looked across the street and there was a 4-foot snowdrift blocking the door of our neighbor across the street's house. And I just like shut the curtains. Our power had been out. It was already down to about 40 degrees in the house. And I was like, we're going to have a hard time surviving this thing. You know, so it stopped being a fun thing and it became sort of a survival thing for a lot of people. But luckily, most people did survive it.
All right, so Kev, what are you?
Yeah,
I remember looking at those old DIFAX charts that used to come in back in those days.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say first. I remember coming in on Monday, and you were standing there with the MRF in your hand, and you handed that to me. And
the
it's
MRF.
Like one of those little, it was like one of those cartoons, you know, where your eyes go, and you just kind of see what's there. And that was the beginning of it. And then there was some discussion about, you know, well, are you going to go with it on the evening news on Monday, or what are you going to do?
And understand it, you know, it was like in the 70s that week. I mean, this is mid-March in the southern United States. We had the Spring Home and Garden Show, this big trade show that goes on. And, I mean, the flowers were blooming. Nobody in their right mind would forecast a big snowstorm. And I always take the approach of kind of phasing it in. And, you know, but by the time we got to Thursday, the day before the blizzard, as I recall, we were at 6 to 9 inches. And that scared me to death. I remember the general manager of that place called the news director wanting to know if I was a lunatic. I mean, really. But the news director backed me up and said, no, he's not. He sincerely thinks it's going to happen. And as it turns out, of course, that was a horribly under-forecast event. 6 to 9 inches was way, way, way on the low side where most people had way over 1 foot. But it started on a Friday afternoon, and the thing peaked Friday night, the night of March 12th, the pre-dawn hours of March 13th. And, you know, I remember during the night, you know, we kept going out that back door. And, and remember, you know, some bonehead locked it. Who would lock this door? What's the point? And then we realized nobody had locked the door. It was a snowdrift that went up to the roof, and we couldn't get out because of a snowdrift. And that is so foreign to where we are down here. But I think for me, the real highlight, Kevin, you remember this Sunday night, all right? So we couldn't go home, and we were stuck. And Sunday night, there was a guy that did a local music show here on television for 37 years named Country Boy Eddie.
Yep.
And I bet you JB remembers who that is. Remember Country Boy Eddie? JB? And
you're muted, JB.
Yeah, you're muted,
sir,
there, JB.
I remember him very well. Sure do. I listen to him all the time.
So he called up there, and for the first time in 37 years, he was snowed in. The man could not come to work, so he asked me to host his program the next morning. That was the worst hour of local television in the history of this market. You know, the funniest thing were these commercials, and I read some of them. I'm not supposed to do that, but we had Bill Bolin was meant to be a news guy, and he couldn't do it. So the first was a product called Rabbit Nuggets, and I thought it was like, you know, food you feed your pet rabbit. It's like rabbit meat that people eat. And of course, it's, you know, it was like a Saturday Night Live skit. It said low in cholesterol and it tastes just like chicken. Yeah, all right. And then he had a product called Jogging in a Jug. And understand, I had not been sleeping. I was worn out. And I opened that. It was like a jug of vinegar. That whole thing was the most bizarre hour of local television. But we finally made it out of there on Monday. So that was something. And remember when Dan got lost, Kevin? Dan Satterfield got lost?
He went home and couldn't get back in, so it ended up being you and me the entire weekend. I was kind of looking at some of the video, and is it Mike Wilhelm that posted all that some years ago?
Yes, friend of the show, Mike Wilhelm.
What a great thing that was that he did that, because there's quite a bit of it, and I was kind of watching that doing my forecast this afternoon, but I was really struck at the advancements in the technology as far as presenting the stuff. I mean, we spent half the time with a close-up shot of that little, what was like a Heath kit weather station that was on the back of the wall.
The question now is, how many people know what a Heath kit is?
Yeah, really. Yeah. That thing was amazing, though. It was just this little display, and we kept zooming in and out of that, going, well, the wind's now gusting to 30-something. How about that? And then we'd come back out and show three radar pictures, and we didn't have a lot back then.
Then we had that little aircraft radar. The antenna was about the size of a kitchen trash can lid. Yes. This was an aircraft radar. It was marketed by a company called ADT in like Bloomington, Indiana. And the guy that sold it, those were a guy named Marty Reese. I don't know why I remember all this, but it will do okay for convective targets, but it was kind of a strange situation with that. But the graphics were primitive and the technology was primitive, but we made it through it. And the whole thing was a disaster because we did have people with no power for 5, 6, 7 days. You had people that needed medication to sustain their life. You had people that needed to be delivered to the hospital. You had women going into labor, and the National Guard was called in, and it was a rough weekend. I mean, for the people lucky enough to have power and heat, they go out there and have fun. Yeah, come back and laugh and have. It was a warm, fuzzy feeling, but for a lot of people, it was rough. In fact, a couple of, we call them blizzard babies. They were born in a National Guard unit on the way to the hospital, and they couldn't get there. So
go ahead, Bill.
James, do you remember what the high was on Wednesday when you were going in to talk to your news director about the storm?
It was in the 70s, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was 75 on the 10th. Wow. That's just unbelievable.
Who in their right mind would forecast a big snowstorm when it's 75 degrees?
Well, the funniest thing is the boss in my hotel company, you know, back then, was a man named Corey Jackson. And, you know, I had all the hotels on alert. I had them, you know, dieseling up their generators and buying extra food and bringing in staff. And he walked in my office on Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock and said, "You're nuts. It's not going to do anything." And so the next morning, looked out, and I'm literally walking over fences trying to find firewood, you know, to try to survive this thing. I get a call from him, and he says, "Hey, Mr. Murray, this is Corey Jackson." "Hello, Mr. Jackson." He goes, "I hate to admit it, but you were right."
But, you know, the greatest thing about the blizzard of 93, back in those days, there were no internet trolls. I mean,
yeah.
You didn't have to deal.
If they wanted to troll you, they had to pick up the phone and call or write a letter.
Exactly.
Or get you on CompuServe.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, we had a dial-up modem back then. Remember that, Kevin? We could dial up and get into CompuServe and check your CompuServe email or Prodigy, which was the other big online service. But it was all you had to make a phone call. And back then, I've not answered my phone here in 15 years. I don't answer phones anymore. I just don't do phones. But I did back then. And you know, most of them were mad. It ain't going to stick, you moron.
It was 75 degrees on Wednesday.
That's why
you didn't answer my telephone call this afternoon.
No, I have not answered my phone in 15 years. It is so freeing. Go ahead, Kevin.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, you know who deserves a shout out and props, because I have told this story so many times, and it's in a way one of the early examples, if you can stretch the metaphor, of social media, and that was David Tinsley and Mike Wood, because they went up on WERC that weekend and just started taking calls from people, and what it turned into, and you have repeated this a number of times via social media after tornado events and so on and so forth, especially after the April 27th thing, is all of a sudden you become this platform, and it was just taken away from you. But they did the same thing where people, you know, we talk about it lightly now, but there were a lot of people that were in a lot of trouble. They were stranded for one reason or another, or they needed medicine, or even just needed something like diapers. And all of a sudden people started calling and saying, well, I need this, I need that, and the other thing. And then somebody in a four-wheel drive vehicle would show up on their street and just help these people. And I thought that was amazing. And I have told that story so many times. And those two guys just went out and did it, and they deserve a lot of credit for it.
Yeah, commercial radio, they were heroes during the blizzard in this market because of what they did. There was no social media back then. That was social media. And let me tell you what, we had people that were freezing to death because it dropped to 2 degrees above zero.
Yeah.
Interstate 20, Central Alabama on March 14th. It was radiational cooling. You know, the sky was clear. The wind was light. We had a foot of snow on the ground. Yep. 2 degrees, no power. It was really bad. So
I had the bright idea that I would go out and put all the food from our freezer on top of my my Pontiac. Sunhawk or whatever it was. And I looked out there on Sunday morning and there were two German Shepherds on top of the car. And I had to go out there and fight them for the toaster strudel.
See, the way that works, Bill, is that you do that with your beer and other things that are in cans.
I learned the hard way. Thank you, Nate. Where were you in 1993, Nate?
I was in high school in Winston-Salem, and I was dry slotted. We got bupkis. We got some wind. But there wasn't really, you know, you look back through the history books and you know, Raleigh and Winston-Salem and Green, you know, the first order station nearest me was Greensboro and Charlotte down to the south. And, you know, the 41 mile per hour wind gust at Raleigh is about all I can talk about. We got a little bit of snow, but nothing like what they got in the mountains. And then they had severe weather along the coast. And we got,
I believe Matt Mitchell got over 50 inches, didn't he?
Yep. And Boone got hit pretty hard as well. But those of us in the Piedmont, the dry slot, sort of took all that away, and we didn't really get a whole lot.
And you have to remember the storm surge and the tornadoes in Florida on the south side of the storm.
That's the funny thing though, because when I was in college, you know, a couple of years later, when we were filling out, you know, the practice obs and everything, you're learning how to decode the ray obs and all that kind of stuff and plot those by hand, that one of the days that we were given, and we of course didn't know that when it was handed to us, was the morning of I think it was either the 11th or 12th, but the day as it was sort of winding up across the East Coast. And one of the things that we had to track was, I think it was the Tampa rayob, the balloon just blew way the heck out into nowhere, and it would have generated like a 300 mile per hour wind. And that was a test of, can you tell that this is bad data from looking at it? And, you know, most of us, you know, being, you know, young kids, we didn't get that right. But that's my memory of that storm is living it through everybody else. And we had bigger storms than that around here, but locally, but nationally, that was a huge deal.
I remember the lightning too, James. Remember that? It just it was colored lightning all night. It had the green or a blue or a yellow tinge to it, and I'll never forget standing up there on the mountain and watching these lightning bolts just crawl on the base of the clouds for miles and miles and miles, and then the thunder would return and echo for just this long, long period afterwards.
Yeah, the thunder was very, very strange. That was a strange sound it made.
Well, the dark side came Sunday morning, James. You have to tell that story. That's the only time that James has ever gotten mad in the newsroom.
All right, so I was cranky. Now, I've never been cranky before, but I slept.
Whatever.
No sleep, man. And I, the way it worked back then, and still to some degree works today, after a big event, it's over. We're through. The weather people are through. You kind of hand it to the news department. All right. So here we forecast it. We work the whole deal. It's over. The sun is back. It is now your story to cover the aftermath. And I just thought they were not doing a very good job. I mean, I thought we really worked hard. We did the best we could. I mean, we worked really hard all night with no sleep. And I just thought they weren't doing an effective job. And they did. So I don't even know what they were doing. I just saw something and I finally got mad. Now, this television station had the studio upstairs. The news department was downstairs. So I walked down there and I said, if you think you're in charge, raise your hand because I want to talk to you. And about five people raised their hand. I mean, it's like nobody knew who was in charge. All these guys raised their hand. It was a total disaster down there. So we had to have a little editorial meeting from the weather people to get them back on focus, to let them know this is an historic storm. You cannot blow the coverage of this. This is a big, the craws weren't running right. The information was old. It was just, they were just treating it like it was some kind of no big deal. They were out there, pooting around, playing in the snow, throwing snowballs, farting around down there, and they weren't doing their job. So I had to go fuss
around
at them.
Is that our new show title? Just pooting around.
Just pooting around, man. That's what they were doing.
That's what we do every week.
Yep. So JB, you took your hat off. That means you're getting serious. So let's move forward 20 years, March 12th, 2013. What is happening across the nation tonight?
Putting around means you're passing gas, and you have a guy up in...
We're supposed to mute our microphones when we do that, just so you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, boy.
Oh, boy.
You had a guy at Channel 6.
We've lost total control of this show. Go ahead, JB.
You had a guy at one of your TV stations that passed volumes of it and ran everybody out of the office.
Oh.
Tell us that story.
No, I'm not. I am the host of this show, and it is your time to talk about weather around the nation right now.
Okay, there's not much going on this evening. Radar around 9 o'clock tonight. National radar showed that only about 15% of the United
Uh-oh.
Oh, no, boy. JB just away. He just hung
he
up
lost
on himself.
All internet, apparently.
Wow, I mean, he is frozen. Wow.
Because his remote connection to me just went away.
Uh-oh. Wow.
He shouldn't have taken the hat off.
Let's try to reactivate him here.
But the bottom line is the weather is very quiet, so I figured he was going to say that. I mean, it's pretty amazing for March. Typically this time of the year, somewhere you've got a major winter storm, you've got a tornado outbreak, you got a flood. Oh, he's back.
He's back.
JB, we lost you for a minute. You were saying that it's quiet around the nation, so just pick it up from there.
All right, that's starting at the beginning then. Not much going on. Radar now shows showers with some snow flurries in Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Wisconsin, Michigan, and parts of Iowa, but no precipitation along the southern tier of states all the way from the Carolinas to California. The snow cover chart today shows it was very much like yesterday, with not a lot of widespread snow in the Rockies and Northwest, but there is a solid snow cover in the Northern Plains, the Upper Midwest, and New England. Temperatures tonight, about 70% of the lower 48 was above freezing. Even in Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont, it was in the 40s. Even in Caribou, Maine, at the northern tip of Maine, they had 42 this season. The 30% below freezing across the northern plains in upper Michigan and St. Lakes, Great Lakes. they have teens in Upper Michigan and Northern Minnesota extremes today. 3 below 0 at Yellowstone Park, at Yellowstone Lake. 91 at OCOTILLA, Otillo Wells, California. The lowest in Alaska. Have you been there, Bill? The lowest in Alaska was 27 below at Arctic Village. Valdez still has 50 inches of snow on the ground. Trivia question. Name a weather reporting station somewhere in the United States that makes you think of a weather instrument.
What state?
Can't tell you.
You'd have to break your legs.
Give us another clue.
California.
Thermal?
Thermal.
Oh, yes. Thermal. Very good.
Ah, there. I was thinking three-letter code. That was my bad.
So was I.
What are you eating, Bill?
Tonight's apple pie with ice cream is brought to you by my wife, Sally.
Ooh. Now, wait a minute. She's recouping from surgery, and she's making you apple pie? Shouldn't it be the other way around?
Isn't that interesting? But, you know, living in the South, one of the great things is people bring you food for weeks after surgery, Nate.
So, that's true.
Tonight, Alan Gillespie brought us food and chicken and good stuff and apple pie a la mode.
And apple pie is appropriate to his pilgrim hat, too.
Yes. It is, isn't it? Kind of makes you think about Thanksgiving, but. Sally rolled around on this cool little cart and brought me some ice cream and pie.
All right, hey, let's check that email inbox.
Letters, we get letters. We get stacks and stacks of letters.
All right, so let's take a look at the email. First off, James, I want to see if you have the audio clip from our Estonian correspondent.
Yes, I do. A lot of audio here, but I do believe this is the right one, so let's roll it.
Hello, Weather Brains. This is Tarmo Danilso from Laguja, Estonia, with a quick update. Currently, over here in Estonia, as I'm recording this on Tuesday evening, it's mostly clear, and the nights are a bit chilly. For example, for tonight, there is a forecast of lows down to minus 4 degrees Fahrenheit. At least the daytime is pretty reasonable, with highs into the 20s. And it's a bit warmer than a few nights before, when the overnight lows went into the negative teens. I'm looking forward to spring, even though I acknowledge I live as far north as Alaska, so I should be grateful for the warmth I get throughout the year. In the meantime, there has been some activity in other parts of Europe. Of course, the blizzard in Western Europe, but also there has been pretty active weekend in some other areas where it is a bit warmer. For example, even right now, I'm looking at the lightning map for Europe and seeing some activity in as far north as southern Germany. But on Sunday, there was a tornado in Hungary. I have even taken a look at some pictures, and it just looks like there was some sort of a non-supercell tornado, kind of like what I had back in last July. Also on Sunday, funnel clouds were reported in France, and on Saturday there were tornadoes and water spouts in Spain and Portugal. So I guess this spring is starting to show itself, although here in Estonia it's still winter and there does not appear to be and insight, at least in the non-voodoo land. All right, that's it from me. Have a great evening over there. From Lago Estonia, this was Tarmo Danilso.
I wonder what the Estonian groundhog is called.
I just, you know, it took him saying that he lives about as far north as Alaska for me to understand why a high in the 20s is reasonable. Gotta love that. All right. I have a guest suggestion from Mike Tolliver in Harrisonburg, Virginia. We will recommending one of the local meteorologists there as a guest panelist. We'll work on that. Kevin, isn't that your department now?
Well, we actually upgraded her, Nate, from panelist to a guest weather brain because she actually has a pretty fascinating story. You know, she worked for Chili's and was into weather.
Chili's.
Somehow parlayed that into a weather career.
Wow.
I love that.
She's actually been upgraded to guest weather brain.
That's you know, doing what you need to do in order to chase your passion, and I love that.
Exactly.
That's
good. Really? Nice.
All right, email from Chris Hoseman, sending us a note to one of the latest entries from Dr. Cliff Mass and his blog. This one entitled "The Heavy Rains of Poseidon." Nice nautical reference there if you want to take a look at that. Got an email from a friend of the show, Wallace Stuckey, talking about the Daily Beast article. Kevin, have you had any response in your quarters about the about that article? I know we've seen there's a discussion that got going on a couple of Facebook groups, but have you heard anything personally about it?
Not a peep, not one thing. Didn't hear from the author of the article either. When I talked to him, I said, hey, let me know when it comes out, and never heard from him. So,
How much did they pay you guys to be in that?
Same thing we get paid for this program.
Yeah. Nothing.
Touché.
So, in any event, that is that. We have a comment on a previous edition of Weather Brains on YouTube. This is a UIW Wild Thing asking, James, if you and your team could explain next week, that would be this week, how a number of computer models could all overestimate the snowfall in the Washington, D.C. area with the storm that was named, depending on who you talk to, either a storm, Saturn, or Snowquester.
And Nate is our East Coast correspondent, so we're going to lay that one on him. That apparently was a huge bust in Washington, D.C. and Baltimore, right? I mean,
but here's the thing. We missed, if you go from downtown D.C. due west, you miss half a foot of snow by less than 20 miles. Mm-hmm. And in some places, the gradient was even tighter than that, including in our viewing area where one part of Mecklenburg County, Virginia, they had, you know, enough snow to cover, not just a dusting, but to cover the ground. And in other places, they got nothing. So that they didn't miss by much in that case. And reading the Capital Weather Gang blog, which is an excellent blog, especially if you live in Northern Virginia, the D.C. area, they do a really good job. And one of the things they do that I think all meteorologists should do, whether you do it as publicly as they do or not, I don't know, but I recommend it, is they went back and they looked at the forecast and they tried to pick it apart and they updated people's, like, this is what we think we did well and this is what we think we did poorly. And they mentioned that the thing that got them was they didn't talk about the uncertainty or the lack of confidence they had with the exact totals in the D.C. area. But
bold headlines going like
I
was gonna say, wasn't the thing overhyped to begin with? I mean, you know, forecast bust or not, I think the bigger damage came from the overhyping, as I understood it before that.
Well, and that, I think, you know, folds back into the idea of whether how well you're expressing the uncertainties of a particular storm. You know, if you've got the potential for a foot of snow in a major urban area, but the uncertainty is off the charts high or very high, as it was, you know, in this case, you know, with the exact lineup of where that's going to show up, then I think you, that may have been where they goofed, and that's where they felt like they fell short.
Well, but news departments, they don't know from uncertainty. Well, they just see the thing coming and they're going to make a big deal out of it because they're invested in keeping people on edge about the thing.
Well, and that, I think, is partly on us to try and rein in our news departments and to ensure that they understand, yeah, the worst case scenario with this is bad, but the best case scenario is we get nothing, and to try and help the news decision makers understand what the circumstances are. Now, not everybody's going to be able to do that. I mean, I think you're going to need a James Spann kind of a person who's been there a long time and has the trust and the ear of the news department to be able to make those kinds of calls and to have that heard. But
I'm interested to see, though. Who was the guy that was it Panovich? So somebody up there had the most accurate snow forecast map of all time.
That was my pick of the week last week. And, okay. It was great. Not very precise, mind you, but accurate.
It was like from 0 to 16 inches. I mean,
yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. We need to get Jason Salmonow from Capital Weather Gang back on here because I was really interested in this snowquester thing, if that's how you say it. I was completely confused by it. And we need to get him on here. He wrote a little bit about it on their page, but I think there was a combination of things. You know, there's a certain thing going on in Washington that made that name what it was. Would it have caught, you know, if it was not
politically related? I guess probably not. But is he going to name the next one? And now we're going to have everybody. I think this is a snowball rolling downhill, pun intended, because everybody's going to start naming for each individual city. Well, what does that mean?
An interesting. And one of the things that, and I'm sort of previewing my pick of the week, but they had been in touch with somebody who tracks all sorts of social media metrics and stuff, and they said
memes
that these
and stuff,
and Snowquester was 6 times more viral than the name the Weather Channel gave for it, which was Saturn. And the way they figured that is they computed the number of times it was mentioned, and out of the 200 and some odd times that Saturn was mentioned in their sample, all but 24 were on the Weather Channel. So whereas, you know, the Capital Weather Gang, they sort of got the ball rolling. It was a user suggestion. It was something they jumped on, which I think helps in the sense that it was at least started at the very beginning as something that sort of bubbled up from below. But, you know, I think Twitter has proven, and if you want to follow the papal conclave or any other big weather story or, you know, big news story, Twitter doesn't need any help coming up with names for stuff. You know, the media's role is perhaps to, you know, highlight one or amplify one, but we don't need any help picking these things. And quite honestly, you know, that's actually a really interesting question, is to what extent should these things be named nationally versus, you know, something that's local. I don't know that Snowquester would have meant anything in North Carolina had that hit here, but for folks in D.C., that's all they were talking about, and so there was a local connection. And you're right, Kevin. I'm concerned that may wind up blowing up, and it's you know, winter storm Snowquester in D.C., and it's winter storm Beantown in Boston, and you know, whatever.
Well, and what happens this summertime when somebody in a given market like Washington or Philadelphia or New Orleans decides they want to give a different name to a hurricane because it's in their marketing interest? I mean, I say that half jokingly, but then you have to say, well, is somebody going to come up and do that? Some PR department? And that's just really out of the box.
And the other question is whether or not that turns into, you know, are we naming things other than hurricanes and winter storms, as that conversation was going on one of the Facebook groups that we follow, that a certain national cable outlet was at least hinting at the idea they might start naming things on smaller timescales than that.
The Weather Channel tonight has already named the next winter storm is called Central. And it's taking shape on the Western Aleutians, and we'll move in across the
Winter Storm Central. I love it.
Let me start over. The Weather Channel has already named the next winter storm tonight. It's called Central, and it's taking shape on the Western Aleutians. It'll come across Seattle, then across the Northern Plains, and into the Northeast. It's expected to be a fairly major storm.
Yeah, and Nate, the other 24 references to Saturn on Twitter were all looking for parts for their old cars.
I love it.
But Nate, tell more about this thing that was on. You're talking about a thing that came up on the Broadcast Meteorologist group on Facebook, which is a closed group. But this is the bit where somebody was trying to attribute to the head of the Weather Channel that he was sort of hinting that they might go and start naming tornadoes and whatnot, you know, I've just told it, but you tell it, fill it out.
Well, I mean, that's that. I mean, this was the South by Southwest Interactive Conference that's going on in Austin, Texas right now. And, the comment was that social media saves lives, which I don't know that anybody even in this group would argue that point, in the sense that it's a way that people can stay connected. People get warnings that way. We know this. So the question now is, you know, how do you best use that? And there's been some discussion among some folks that, you know, we ought to start hashtagging these, you know, smaller storms. Now that was, you know, sort of commentary, not confirmed, that sort of thing. But, you know, I think the cat may be out of the bag there. And at this point, do we try and wrangle that cat back in? I hope it's not out of the bag, because I think that's, you're naming something on, it's one thing to name something that's got time scales on the order of days where you can tell people what it is and you may not like it, but the Weather Channel and other groups are going to try and talk it up and use the name and use some sort of connect things. You don't have that kind of time. If you've got a lead time on a tornado warning at 12 minutes, you ain't got that kind of time.
Well, I don't think he has any intention. I don't think anybody has any intention of trying to name
especially before or during tornadoes. And I think he knows that. I think the danger here is that this guy is basking in the glow of the press and the ink and the media that he's getting behind this naming of winter storms thing. And because he's not one of the meteorologists, he's not Stu or Jim Cantore or any of these guys that is going to be held accountable for that kind of a statement, he can say, and he knows he can say, anything he wants that will now get him more ink. And I think that's incredibly dangerous. And I think it's irresponsible as well, because he can just go out there and say whatever he wants to say just to gin up a little bit of trouble. And I think that's unfortunate.
Yeah. Anyway, that's that. I don't know that we're going to solve that problem tonight.
Did we solve that one?
Yeah. And the three or four people that were still watching have now hung up. We got a clip from Michael W. Moss and talking about when it was snowing in the warning area. This was an issue where, and Bill, fill me in on this, because you had sent me a note about this.
Yeah, I think happened is, you know, they're planning to send one of these test tornado warnings during their Severe Weather Awareness Week, which is like next week or a few weeks down the road, but they didn't realize that they put the wrong VTEC code or they were in operational mode when they were going to test it, you know, test the test in effect, and it actually went out and it hit all the television systems and stuff, and no one was expecting it, and it generated a lot of fear and a lot of concern, even though outside it was, you know, snowing to beat the band. And so it raised an interesting point here, because when we had our Severe Weather Awareness Week, and James and I had lunch with the meteorologist in charge a couple of weeks ago, and you know, I asked the question why we didn't send test warnings, and he said, well, it's because we have so many tornado warnings, and you know, we have all these opportunities. But I thought that it was a missed chance for, you know, the Weather Service here to tell the television meteorologists, we're going to do this at 9:40, don't tell anybody, but you know, go live for a couple of minutes on Wednesday in the middle of, you know, Regis and Kathy Lee or whatever's on at that hour,
Regis,
and, you know, and say, you know, here's, you know, this is a test and all that. And I thought we missed a great opportunity, but you know, I was voted down very quickly in the meeting. So I wondered what everyone else thought about that. And obviously Michael thought that, you know, he came in on the side that this sort of thing should not be done at all. And I wondered where y'all landed. And we get crickets.
Well, we're actually, the state of North Carolina is right now. Yes, yes. The state of North Carolina right now does not do the test warnings. They send it out as this sort of the weekly test, and it is explained that that's what's happening and so forth. And the concern is that they don't tone out radios. They don't do any of the other, they don't put into process any of the electronical stuff. So you have to know that it's coming ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And there's been some discussion about whether or not we want to try and do the test warnings here. I don't know that I have a strong feeling one way or the other, you know, on that. It's the kind of thing that it needs to, the people that need to know that it's happening need to know it's coming, and whether it comes out as a regular thing or not, I'm not sure it really matters, other than to say that it's a good way to sort of test your gear and make sure that it's plugged in and toning and all that kind of stuff.
Well, and the problem in Milwaukee is it hit the WEA, nobody expected, and that created a great bit deal of concern. But it's a great chance, like you say, Nate, to test smartphone apps and, you know, on television, a chance to give a little education. You know, they're already testing the tornado sirens, you know, that's no big deal. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was a mistake and a chance for us to capitalize on, you know, a lot of effort that goes into Severe Weather Awareness Week.
Yeah. I think there's an interesting case to be made both ways. On the other hand, you don't want to have people, you know, going, you know, having this thing going off and people not knowing what it is. And I don't know.
We were in Washington during Cherry Blossom Festival last year, which, you know, was one of the beautiful weeks of the year. Mm-hmm. It was in the 80s and sunny, and it was the Virginia test day. And so they actually issued the warning, and it went off on our smartphone, and the siren sounded and, you know, all that. And I don't think a person in Washington, D.C. even noticed it.
Oh, boy. Wow. So anyway, That is that. We'll post a link to that on the Facebook or on the WeatherBrains website. And speaking of the WeatherBrains website, we now have a listener survey response from right here in North Carolina. Jason from Harrisburg, North Carolina, which is over near Charlotte. That's Brad Panovich's neck of the woods. Actually enjoys the video. He says, I love seeing everyone's personalities. It brings the discussions to life. I love to be able to laugh while learning. Learned about us through James's appearance on Reed Timmer's podcast a little while back. Appreciates the variety of topics as I look forward to Tuesdays, or in this week case, Wednesdays, when I can escape my 5x5 cubicle at work and hang out with my favorite weather weenies on YouTube. That is, when my boss isn't watching. And that's all I got for this week. If you want to send us a note, have a question, want to make a comment, send us a note at email@weatherbrains.com. That goes to everybody, and we'll all see it, but I'm the one that handles it on the show because Kevin's too lazy to do it anymore.
Thank you.
Also, if you wouldn't mind, if you like the program or if you don't like the program, go to weatherbrains.com, click on the listener survey response, and that's your opportunity to tell us what you think and whether or not we can go fly kite.
It's time now for Picks of the Week. And what we're going to do is start with the fog bank from Skydiver. We're going to come back. Everybody shares something weather-related that might be useful to somebody else. So let's kick it off with the fog bank.
Hello, WeatherBrains listeners. This is Skydiver bringing you the fog bank. My first pick, Chuck Pravat, sent me the Birmingham Wiki page on James Spann. I think you'll enjoy it. James, is that birthday correct? I thought you were younger than I am, but it looks like you're 11 months older. You are old. My second pick, Earth Science Picture of the Day with a sun pillar in southwestern Illinois. Third, the Capital Weather Gang on the quality of the European forecast models. Fourth up, I've got the Earth Observatory with some nice pictures of the Texas snowfall from, I guess it was early March. And finally, the number 6 Nationwide Race Series team has a highly sophisticated weather station they keep in their pit. A picture was sent out on Twitter showing the details. And hat tip to Chuck Pravat for that. Thanks for listening. Skydiver out.
All right, let me start with my pick. I am going to pick RadarScope. I know it's an old app, but this week it was upgraded to version 2.0. And if you've been a RadarScope user, you should probably have gotten notification, but they've added a new user interface. They've got some new things in there, like a distance indicator between storms and a lot of new little doodads. I honestly have not had a chance to play with it yet, but if you've got RadarScope now, you get it free. There's no charge. Everybody that's paid for it, you get that free. Otherwise, this might be a good time to buy it. So RadarScope 2.0 is out. I know it's out.
I have a question, though.
Yes.
Well, it's great. All the new stuff is great, but I do you know, can you only get the tilt 1 on stuff now? I don't see the higher tilt levels in the products list. Does anybody
really
know? Anybody
with it? I think you can, but you have to go in. Hold on one second. Let me pull it up. Because that would have been a major step backwards.
Yeah, I figured it had to be in there somewhere.
If you pull up the product list and then
tap. You push on it. That's right.
Do you tap over here where it says tilt 1?
Oh.
And then you can change your tilt. And so.
Oh, look at there. It slides in. Okay.
Yeah, but they've got
I should have figured that out.
A distance tool, and they've tweaked that user interface, and it's going to be different, but you flip up the product list from the bottom of the screen to select the products, change the tilts, and anyway, if you've not played...
A lot more room for, you know, for the radar. I think that's what they've done.
Yeah, you can make it go full screen, which is cool, by holding on. I figured out most of that. I feel like Jeff Jarvis on the Twig program. They spent half of that show with Gina trying to tell Jeff how to use his phone, so I apologize for that.
Oh, by the way...
All right, so that's my pick. Let's see if J.B. Elliott has a pick of the week for us.
Foghorn, please.
Wow. All right, heard that foghorn coming.
Actually, no, you shouldn't have gotten the foghorn, J.B., because you asked about the Mississippi State Symposium, which I think is happening. But I haven't heard
anything. Weekend of the 22nd, that's right.
Yeah, so let that be your pick.
That has become your pick of the week. We are unfoghorning you, JB. The Southeast Severe Storm Symposium, Mississippi State University. That is, March 22nd and 23rd. A simple Google search, you'll be able to find information on that. That's a really nice, nice symposium there. So, again, we'll make that your pick. Is that okay, JB?
Yes, sir.
All right, Nate, what's your pick of the week?
Well, my pick is the Capital Weather Gang and the case for naming Snowquester. Not necessarily because I agree with it, but it's an interesting reading. I think it's going to be a really interesting discussion that we have. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to put in a plug because I can, and I have a pulpit and a really nice microphone. We're doing the give the guy a little audio gear and he gets full of himself. But no, we're putting on a pretty awesome conference. If you haven't heard about it, it's going to be in Nashville, Tennessee, the last week of June, the 25th, 26th, 27th, 28th, including a short course. But it's the AMS. It's the 41st Conference on Broadcast Meteorology, which is mainly for broadcast folks, TV, radio. But at the same time, there's also going to be the second conference on weather warnings and communication. And this is more for everybody. And one of the things, one of the highlights of this is we're going to have a panel discussion on the naming of winter storms. And we're working this because I don't want this to be a bash session, because if that's all we do, it's a waste of time. But we need to start as a community. We need to start thinking about what are the implications of this? Who should do it? If we're going to do it at all, do we have any data at that point that we can talk about whether or not it's effective and whether or not it's good? And if we do, and that data say we should keep doing, then who should do it? What are the criteria, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
So, in my opinion, winter storms ought to have a bad name, like Hitler and...
So, anyway, mark your calendars for that. We'll have a program and more information posted on the AMS website here shortly, but it's the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, the last week of June in Nashville, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. By the way, Southwest flies there, and it's dirt cheap to get there, so sign up.
All right, we'll be there. Kevin, what's your pick of the week? And Kevin is muted once again, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to keep the typing
down. Bill 1, Kevin 2 tonight.
Going to a place that I go to often for pick of the week, and that is boston.com/big picture. And it's a couple weeks back now, but there are just some fantastic photographs under a heading called Winter Weather. And they're just, as usual, beautiful. They're from around the world. Quite a big gallery this time in this particular section. So, again, boston.com/big picture. One of the funnier ones, it's not in this group, but I remember seeing after the forecast bust in Washington. It's taken from several stories, 5, 6, 8 stories up in a building in Washington. And it's looking down, and it was doing nothing but raining. It's looking down at the street next to a covered bus stop, and there's a guy laying on the brick sidewalk in the rain, not a snowflake around, in making a snow angel. And it was really fun.
Yeah. So, all right, cool. Anyway. Bill Murray, what's your pick of the week?
Before we get to that, James, talk about guests for a second. Chuck Doswell next week, and I am officially 5 minutes.
Hang on, wrong button. I'm sorry. The email song is gone. When I heard Chuck Doswell, I just went crazy. I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, so now I'm officially sick until next Tuesday night at 8:30. So, James, you're in charge of arranging the Google Plus with Chuck, because I can't even imagine how much fun.
Boy, he's going to get cranky. He's going to get real cranky.
I'll record all the test hangouts, because they're probably going to be way better.
Oh, yeah.
Any show we could ever do.
Can we talk naming winter storms with Chuck next week? I hear he has an opinion about it.
Do y'all want me to get Jason Samenow to come on too?
Ooh, sure.
That'd be fun. All right, I'll do that. Greg Nordstrom, as we go back to Mondays on the 25th. Bill Reed from the National Hurricane Center, former director, will be here on Monday, April the 8th. And we have some exciting news. He's going to come and do our Central Alabama NWA chapter meeting in June. So we'll be meeting twice in one day, once in Montgomery at lunch and once in Birmingham in the evening. The date's still to be announced, but he's committed to come and do that. And that's going to be a lot of fun. And my pick of the week relates to our Monday, April 22nd guest, which is Dr. John Knox, who was gracious enough to drive over and come to our chapter meeting last night. And he also is working with some of his students on some tremendous research that they did after the April 27th tornadoes. And they used Facebook to collect a lot of debris from around the southeast. And they believe they have established a world record for lofted debris. Some they tracked 220 miles
wow.
after that tornado. So his research is my pick of the week, his team's research, and the post that we did about it on AlabamaWX.com. And I think that's it, James.
Cool.
Hey, James.
Yes.
I forgot the one I actually wanted to do, and because it came through. I think Brad Panovich posted this. There's a Kickstarter project called Thermodo, T-H-E-R-M-O-D-O. And it's a tiny little dongle that's going to plug into the bottom of your iPhone, and it's a temperature sensor. So you can find that on Kickstarter. They've funded it. They asked for $35,000. It's been funded already to the tune of over $168,000. And I think this little there it is. Good. This little dongle is only going to be like $20 or something like that. So if you're interested in that for your iPhone or portable device, I actually sent the guys a note and I never heard back from them saying, hey, you should come on the show. Now they're in Copenhagen, I think. So
Copenhagen.
It's like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning there. But
oh, come
I'm
on.
Curious. I'm curious as to how, you know, if you're carrying that thing around in your pocket and holding it in your hand, I don't know how you know accurate it's going to be, but it's pretty interesting and it's going to increase the number of sensor reports. And I think these guys were the ones that did that Haze iPhone app that I talked about the other day that was sort of stretching the bounds of the user interface.
What I think they ought to do next is to do a wind sensor, because that's the next sort of thing that would be nice to have in my pocket.
Right.
So look at this. It says that their goal was $35,000. They've raised $168,477. Hey, we need to get we got to get a Kickstarter page for weather brands. What do you say?
Yes. What would we offer people that somebody would want to pay for?
We'll tell them we'll stop doing the show if they'll pay us.
But I wanted to thank very quickly the Georgia Tech chapter of the American Meteorological Society. I was in Atlanta this morning, spoke with him. A lot of Weather Brains listeners were in the crowd. Why? I have no earthly idea. But it was good to see.
They must be doing well in class.
Yeah, there's something up with that. But anyway, we must wrap this up because it's time to do some television. Here's the deal. If you're listening to the show and if you want to watch it, you can do that on weatherbrains.com. The video version is on all the show notes. You can also watch it live as we produce it at live.bigbrainsmedia.com. And again, we're kind of on this Tuesday night schedule for a few weeks. But if you want to get in touch with us, the email address, it is email@weatherbrains.com. And on that website, weatherbrains.com, the Facebook accounts, our Twitter accounts, the Google Plus accounts are all over there. So on behalf of the entire Weather Brains crew, I'm James Spann. Thanks a lot for listening. Have a wonderful week and God bless.